Before I start, I'd like to also express thanks to several people. I'd like to thank the Jewish Historical Society for hosting and sponsoring this event. Mark Swift, the executive director, and all the board members. I'd like to thank the staff down there, particularly Dale and Melissa, for helping with the magazine and helping put all this together. I'd like to thank the Temple of Israel, my hometown synagogue, for hosting this event. This is really a beautiful setup, and we're going to have a good time together. I'd like to thank Rabbi Leibowitz, who's, I don't know whether he's here or not, for his participation. And most of all, I want to thank all of you for coming, especially those of you that I know who came back. It's so great to see so many people from the past. You know, as you get older, you kind of appreciate life a little bit better. And it's a shame we didn't know each other more when we were younger. But there's still time. There's still a lot of time. So I hope we're going to do this again. Okay, here goes. I want to talk a little bit about Spartanburg. Some of you may know this, but most of you don't. Spartanburg was founded in 1785. It was named after the Spartan Regiment. That was a militia group that fought in the Revolutionary War. And their big claim to fame was fighting at the Battle of Cowpens. And that was a huge victory for the colonists against the British. So Spartanburg County was named after the Spartan Regiment. Then several years later, a 2-acre tract of land was set aside in the middle of the county to build a courthouse and a jail, and it became known as the Public Square. This is what it looked like in 1884. That's the oldest picture I could find. And that was a little over 100 years after it being set up. The monument in the middle is to Daniel Morgan, and when it was set up in 1881, there was a big ceremony. Congress appropriated about $23,000, I believe, to build the monument, and it became known as Morgan Square. This was called Sale Day, where the merchants would come in and farmers would come in and sell their wares. Okay. The town slowly grew until the 1830s and then it incorporated. And by that time, there were more and more railroads being built in the area. And the railroad lines would go out like the spokes of a wheel. So this became known as the Hub City, spokes of a hub. And then slowly grew more, and after the Civil War, this became a textile town, and by 1900, there were about 40 textile mills. I understand there were more textile mills in Spartanburg than any city in the state. It's about this time, starting in about the 1880s to 1900, that Jewish families started settling in Spartanburg. And they started coming one by one. And by 1912, there were about 80 Jews living in Spartanburg, and they decided to start a congregation. This is a picture of Abe Levin. He was the first president of the temple. Most of you have never seen this picture. And he had a tailor shop at 113 and a half East Main Street. The building is still there. And the temple was organized in his tailor shop in 1912. And he was elected president. The congregation continued to grow. 2 years later, this man came. He was hired as the first rabbi. Rabbi Hyman Samuel Cohen. He came over from Macon, Georgia, from an Orthodox congregation, and lived here for 2 years and was a rabbi. He died very unexpectedly in 1960. While the congregation was raising money to build a synagogue, we're going to visit that synagogue building later today, in 1917. He also was a rabbi in Newport, News, Virginia before he was in Macon, and then after he passed away, his family moved to Atlanta. And they live with some of the children. This is his wife, Jenny Jacobs Cohen. That's two of her children. The child with the long hair is Irvin Cohen, and the young baby is Philip. He was born in Spartanburg in 1915. And of course, I mentioned before, the rabbi died in 1916. She helped start the first Sunday school here. And this was something that I discovered in my research that I don't think had been done before. And she hired this lady, Isabel Bell Butler. That's a mouthful to say. It's a German name, by the way. She was the first Sunday school teacher. And when you go to the site this afternoon, as you stand at the front of the temple facing north up Dean Street, over on the left, you're going to see a high school building. That's called Frank S. Evans High School, Spartanburg High School. Her house is where those large steps are. That's where the first Sunday school was in that home. And at that time, at the time they set up Sunday school in 1915, there was no congregational building. It came a year later. Rabbi Jacob Raisman is from Charleston. Some of the people from Charleston know who he is. He was the rabbi for KK Beth Elohim. I believe he came in 1915, if my memory is correct. And in his early years, he would travel around South Carolina and visit congregations. He would do weddings, he would do bar mitzvahs, he would do weddings and funerals and so on. And he helped a number of people, a number of towns organize into Jewish congregations. And he was invited in the spring of 1916 to come to Spartanburg by a man named Joseph Spiegel. And he was the guy who was responsible for getting a group of people together to build a synagogue on Dean Street, the first synagogue. He did this for a lot of congregations around South Carolina. And when he came, he raised $5,000. And there's an article on the board out there about that, his visit in the spring of 1916. And he was very instrumental in helping the congregation get started. This is the article that's on the board out there. And I'll just leave it up for a second if you'd like to look at it. The congregation, as I said, had already started in 1912, but in 1916 they decided to formally incorporate with South Carolina Secretary of State, which they did. They raised some money. Then they decided to start building a synagogue, and that's when he came up to raise these funds. This is actually the first synagogue. This is where the Dean Street Synagogue is now located, at the corner of Union, which is to your, if you face the picture to your left, and on the right is Dean Street. And this home was owned by a photographer named A.T. Willis. He was Spartanburg's leading photographer. There's a man standing in a wagon coming up the side road. That's A.T. Willis. And there's a lady on the other curb. You can barely see her. That's his wife. And this was taken from an old glass plate negative that the family found, and they let me look at it, and I was able to identify it. The 1916 city directory says that the temple was using that building as a synagogue during that year. Then they started raising more money. This is A.T. Willis, by the way. His pictures are in a lot of history books concerning the city of Spartanburg and Spartanburg County. And his daughter, I don't know if you know Fowler, is she here? His daughter was invited to be here today. Her husband is sick. And she's helped a lot with the history research that I've been doing. But he was a very famous photographer. He was taking pictures of a lot of historical events, people, places, and so on for about 30 or 40 years. He's the one that sold the property to the synagogue. When he sold this building, the building that you saw before, this building, was physically removed from the property and was rolled across the street down Dean Street, and he built a new home, and he used the porch and other parts of the building to build his new home. We've got some pictures of that. We don't have time to show them today, but some interesting bit of information. Finally, we get to the spring of 1917, and they're ready to build. So they decided to hire an architect. This is the architect who built the Dean Street Synagogue. His name is Luther Douglas Prophet. This picture was made available by his grandson, Wiley Johnson Jr. Interestingly enough, Wiley and I were in the same class at Spartanburg High in 1964. We both played on the JV basketball team together. And at the time, he didn't know much about his grandfather, and I knew nothing about him. But we've gotten together since then, sort of another kind of reunion that's taken place. He also designed the Fremont Elementary School, something called Studley Hospital, and several buildings over at Walford College. Finally, they start building in March of 1917. And this is Rabbi David Marks, very famous rabbi from Atlanta, Georgia. Starting in 1895, he was the rabbi of a synagogue called the Temple. Most of you, some of you heard of the Temple, I'm sure. Very famous rabbi, very famous synagogue in Atlanta. And he came over in 1916 and was the principal dedication speaker. And in May, when they finished the outside of the building, they had a dedication ceremony on May 10, 1917. Another speaker was a man named Ibra C. Blackwood. He was the solicitor for Spartanburg County at the time. He was elected 1 year earlier. And in 1930, he was elected governor of South Carolina. He beat Olin Johnson from Spartanburg in a runoff. And there was a very interesting thing that happened. There were about five or six candidates. There was a close race. And in the runoff, he won Charleston County by over 80%. And there were allegations that all the ballots for Olin Johnson were dumped in the West Ashley River. And most people believe that's a true story. But he lived right across the street from the synagogue, directly across the building to come visit. So everybody was right in the neighborhood as this place is going up. Another speaker was Samuel T. Lanham. He was a master in equity. If you don't know what that is, that's a small claims court. They mostly handle real estate foreclosures, but also non-jury trials. And he served from 1909 to 1923. He was a very gifted speaker. He was the Grand Master of the Masons, and he spoke all over the state of South Carolina. And after he retired, he was appointed a special circuit judge to handle a very famous case. Have any of you ever heard of the Lowman lynchings? I know if the girls up here, they jump up.
Yeah.
You heard of them? No? Okay. In 1925, he went down to Aiken to try a case. A black family was accused of killing a sheriff who had shown up at their farm one night unannounced. And they thought, the Lowman family thought they were trespassers. They claimed they had warrants, but they never showed them to anybody. And when they had a trial, they were found guilty of conspiracy to commit murder. They were supposed to be hung. The Supreme Court reviewed the decision and said the evidence was insufficient in order to do trial. So this individual handled that trial. And when the jury, again, in just a few minutes, found the first member of the family guilty, the judge took the guilty verdict under advisement, came back and said, I'm setting it aside and setting him free. As a result, later that night, the family was taken out of the jail and taken down the road and all shot. And it's one of the most notorious lynching, they call it the lynching, but they were all shot in South Carolina history. But this gentleman was actually there in the middle of that trial. He's a very decent lawyer. He had a reputation for being very, very honest, very ethical, and he upheld the law rather than the lynch mob. It's an unusual thing back then. Dean Street, this is who Dean Street is named after. This man was mayor of Spartanburg twice before the Civil War in the 1840s. Hosea Jefferson Dean, he was a wealthy landowner. Excuse me. And they named the street after him in the late 1890s. As you get down to the synagogue, you'll be turning left on Dean Street. Over on the right, you'll see the First Baptist Church. He used to live there, and he donated the land so they could build a church. That was First Baptist Church in Spartanburg. He also fought the Civil War. After they finished the synagogue, and since Rabbi Cohen had already passed away unexpectedly, this was the second rabbi they hired. This was Rabbi Isaiah Sobel. And to his left is his right. His wife, her name is Mary, unusual Jewish name. She's from Russia. She was also known as Meta. And her parents were sitting in front. Their two children on both sides. The child to the right is Samuel Sobel, and he has an interesting career. He joined the Navy at a young age. And then he went to Yeshiva University and got a degree as a rabbi, was ordained as a rabbi. And then he went to the seminary in Cincinnati and got one from the Reform Movement. and became a chaplain in the Navy. He was the first chaplain in the Navy who was a regular officer. When the Korean War broke out, he was the first chaplain in the Marines. Back in 2000, there was a dedication for the Korean monument up in D.C. It was on TV, and he was one of the principal speakers with John Glenn and President Clinton. And his face and his image is on a marble stone that commemorates that monument. He was here for about 2 years, and there's a little interesting story I want to tell you about him. He was born in a place called Dwinsk in Lithuania, spelled D-W-I-N-S-K. In 1910, his mother passed away. His father was a rabbi. He had several brothers and sisters. One of his brothers was named Kalman, K-A-L-M-A-N. He had already come to America, and he was a rabbi of Cantor. The father sent him to America to get him. The family decided to move to Palestine and get out of Lithuania. So he gets on, he makes his way to Liverpool, England, lands in Philadelphia. His brother's in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Greensburg is near Pittsburgh. I believe it's the home of Seton Hall University, and there's a large Jewish congregation there. He came in March of 1910, made his way to Greensboro in April of 1910, a month later. For the longest time, we could not find out much about this man. All of a sudden, his records started showing up in places like Ancestry.com and other sources. And his citizenship papers came to light. And he said he was coming to America to find his brother Kalman. That's an unusual comment for citizenship papers. And then we found a ship manifest, and it said he was going to Greensburg, Pennsylvania. This was all before he arrived, you know, when he arrived in America. I found his granddaughter, her name is Karen Sachs. She lives up in the Norfolk area, and she gave me this picture. And she told me that the rest of his life, Isaiah looked for his brother Kalman in Greensburg, but could never find him. And the story sort of sat there for a while. And then one year, another record pops up about him going to Greensburg. And I decided to get a map. I called some historians in Greensburg. And we started plotting where everybody lived. And Isaiah shows up in the census record. We had not seen it before. He's actually living in Greensburg a month later after he arrives as a renter or a boarder. His brother's living 3.5 blocks away, and the synagogue is in the middle of two. And he never found it. A couple thousands of miles, never found it. But if you take the documents, you can actually put it on a map. You can see that they actually got that close to each other. And all the evidence in the census records matched up when they came to America, their age and everything. It's a very interesting story, and I have never experienced anything like that before. I've never used Ancestry. I know some of you. There's so many wonderful things you can find in Ancestry. The records are handwritten. They're not computerized. They live in an age of, it's a very impersonal age. We don't really know each other. Back then, somebody would walk into your home and sit down with you and take down the information. And it's almost like you're being there sitting in the living room as you listen to what, you know, as they write down the information. But that was a very interesting story about that man. His son Samuel actually in 1963 went to the Adolf Eichmann trial and spent a month in Israel trying to find the family and never could find them. There is a rabbi in Myrtle Beach who's with Chabad, who's a neighbor of mine. I'm not a very religious person, but I admire this rabbi's very family. And they're now trying to see if they can find the remains of the family, because everybody in Kalman's family did go to Palestine later on, so we'll see how that turns out. It's just an interesting story. Okay, finally, when they finished the building, this is what the synagogue looked like. This is what you're going to see today. This was a 1918 postcard I found. Is Professor Willis here? There you are. This is his postcard. He's in the back. He's a professor over at Converse College, and I thank you for educating me today. Welcome. And he gave me this card several years ago, so I appreciate it. This was published 1 year after the building was built. I'm going to skip that one. That is actually, go back. If you go out into the hall, this is an image on a newspaper article about Yom Kippur, and the people are sort of suffering through the day as they fast. That's interesting. We'll stop here. We're going to go to the synagogue. I'm going to show you some pictures a little bit. We're going to go to the synagogue a little bit later this afternoon, I think 4 o'clock. But that's kind of how the place got started. And then, after the congregation was set up and the synagogue was built, there were only about 30 families, 30 or 35 families at the time that I can find who were members of the congregation. And it stayed that way for a while. And then during the 20s and 30s, a lot of the original founders left. And some new people started moving in. And that's when my father's generation came, late 20s, 30s, 40s. People like Harry Smiley, Smiley families here, I know they're here. It's Gary and Sandy's parents, Gary's parents. Gary's right over here. His real name is Harry Smilovitz, by the way, from Minnesota. He married Rose Hecklin. I know some of the Hecklin families here that came down from Nashville. Abe Smith moved in the 30s. Is Gerald here? I don't see Gerald. The Tannenbaum family came up from Augusta. Joel and Ralph and their father, Harry. Very interesting family. And they had an ancestor named Aaron, who was then Augusta, who was a dairy farmer. Most Jews were merchants, but he was a dairy farmer. He has an interesting story. In 1897, he traveled all the way to Switzerland on his own dime to attend the first World Zionist Organization meeting. And he was not a delegate, but he was introduced. And at this particular meeting, Theodore Herzl announced the idea of a modern Jewish state. And he was recognized as, you know, as somebody interested in that. He was a big Zionist. And there's supposed to be a picture of the two of them, I'm told, I'm trying to find, so. We'll see how that turns out. But anyway, they came up from Augusta, Joel and Ralph Thelma, who later became Thelma Gaffey. The Price family started showing up, and things started changing. From the 1920s to about 1940, there were a lot of rabbis here, but they never stayed for a very long time. They stayed a year or two and moved on. One of the rabbis who came was a man named H.C. Serf Strauss. He was from Augusta, Georgia. He was the rabbi at a Reform synagogue. He came here every week for about 2 years. And he is famous because he started something called the Southern Israelite. How many of you have heard of that? I know some of you have. That's a wonderful publication. He started in 1925. And he later sold it to some people. And it thrived for many years. And they reported stories about Jewish families all over the South. Weddings, deaths, bar mitzvahs, family get-togethers, temple histories, and so on. And if you're really interested in research, you can go online at the University of Georgia, and you can pull up all the issues from the late 20s all the way up to the 80s. A lot of information there. Today, the name has changed, and today it's called the Atlanta Jewish Times, a very famous publication. They still do the same thing, it's just got a different name. Finally, as the synagogue grew, when it first started, I get asked this question a lot. Was it a Reformed temple? Was it an Orthodox temple? It was just a temple. It was a synagogue. About half the people who were founders were what I would call more observant Jews or more traditional Jews than their fellow members. The other half were not that religious, and most people would call them Reformed, although I don't like that term at all. And the first three rabbis they had, in addition to two that I mentioned, there's another one, were all Orthodox, so I don't know what that made of this place. But it was just a temple for everybody. But when the new families came in the 30s and 40s that I mentioned, and late 20s, the congregation took a turn toward the conservative movement. And by 1942, they hired this man. This is Rabbi Samuel Rubel. And he was hired in 1942. He was the rabbi at the Conservative Temple in Greenville at the time. Prior to that, he was a rabbi of an Asheville Orthodox synagogue. And prior to that, he was in Greenville an earlier time. And before that, he was back in Asheville, so he moved around a lot. But he was hired in 42. He stayed here until 1954. And he really established a solid relationship with the general public and the community at large. This is one of his confirmation classes. I believe, I've been told this is around 1945, and then Henry Jacobs told me this. And there's only one person on the girl side, the lady side, Beverly Shane, that some of you may recognize, Gary, you recognize Beverly Shane. She is the second person from the right. On the right side is I believe Sheldon Gilbert, Harold Simon, Henry Jacobs, and we're not sure who the other two people are. Rabbi Rebell again helped, he really established the rabbinate here in Spartanburg and built a real solid relationship with the community. He spoke almost every week at a service club or a city club and was a beautiful speaker, loved to write. And in 1954, he left Spartanburg and went to a place called Herkimer, New York. His son Israel, was a basketball player at Spartanburg High. And in 52, I believe they were state champions, and he was on that championship team. He was a starter. He went to Duke University his first year, and then he transferred to West Point and became an Army officer. And so his father moved up to be the area in West Point. Herkimer was north of West Point. And he was the rabbi there for some 15 to 17 years. And then a year later, Rabbi Stauber came from Panchal on Long Island. He is the sort of the father figure to most of us who grew up here. That's his wife Phyllis, and that's Alvin, who's here. Over there's Alvin. Welcome back. That's his bar mitzvah picture. That was in the magazine, I believe.
Did he call us?
And this is the Young Judea group. This would have been the mid-60s. He was very active with the youth groups. Most of these people you see in the picture are here today. There's a couple of people that passed away, but most everybody's here. And this is another picture of us leaving the synagogue in 1961. And that's what the Bima looked like at the time, and we'll see that this afternoon. The inside of the building has changed very, very little over the years. I hope I can say this, but 2 weeks ago, I was sort of honored with a call from a man named George Dean Johnson. He's a big developer in town. His company owns the Dean Street Synagogue building. We bought it about 10, 12 years ago. And he wants to preserve that building as an historic landmark, turn it into some kind of museum, meeting, whatever. And he wants to sit down and talk. He liked the articles in the magazine, so that was a great thing to happen. And I hope I can help in some way, but he's very interested in doing that. He is not Jewish, but there's an interesting story about him. He has a sister-in-law who married his brother, married his brother. Her name was Ann Cobb. I went to high school with her, Ben went to high school with her, several other people. She is the great-granddaughter of David Greenwald, who was one of the founders of the synagogue. The Greenwald brothers, there were four of them. They all married outside the faith, became Episcopalians and Presbyterians. But they have four or five grandchildren, Johnson family, Cobb family, and several others. And they all gave them the middle name of Greenwald, so it means a lot to them. It's a very interesting story. But they have a real, real interest in the Jewish community here, and they want to preserve that building, so it's going to be exciting. And maybe couple of 3 years now, maybe we can come back and have some kind of an event for that. It's going to get renovated and fixed up. While I'm on the topic of that, we have special guests, and Arthur, one member, would stand up in the back. Please stand up. This is Pastor Arthur Thompson and his wife Linda. Their congregation is called Bread of Life Christian Church. They're now using the building, and they're going to give us a tour this afternoon. We're really glad they're letting us come here today. I'd like everybody to go up and give a big hug, because they're two of the nicest people I've ever met. And we had a small group of people get together, start working on this back in January, and we went for a visit, and we spent the afternoon and had a wonderful time there. So thank you, and thank you for coming. Okay. That's a postcard of Morgan Square from the 20s and 30s, how it looked. It used to be a trolley car in town that ran from the train station in Magnolia, downtown, down East Main, and it stopped right here at the entrance of the synagogue, and it was a semicircle and it went back downtown. Kind of interesting fact. Now I'm going to tell you about some people that I found in my research that I've never heard of for the most part. I did know a couple of these names, and a lot of people living here have never heard of them. The first person is Anna Kramer Blocky. She's a Polish lady. The Blocky name is a Polish name. Her name Kramer. She was born in a city called Malmo, Sweden in the late 1880s. She came to America with her family and settled in Des Moines, Iowa. She married a man named A.G. Blocky, who was one of the founders of this temple. And they were married in 1904. And a few years later, they settled in Spartanburg and stayed here for about 20 years. She was a voice teacher and a singer, an opera singer. And she did some shows with people from the Metropolitan Opera here in town. She also sang at Madison Square Garden in New York City on a couple of occasions, big productions. And she was considered really a world-class opera singer. She was a contralto. I really don't know what that is. Some kind of a
higher
sounding. Not exactly a soprano, but something just below that. And she was also the choir director at the Presbyterian Church here in town, First Presbyterian Church, which is not far from the synagogue, for about 17 years. And she also worked at Walford, and she was the director of the Glee Club. And they dedicated, one year dedicated the page they have in their annual number. That's up on the wall out in the social hall. So she's a very interesting character. The next one is Harold Cohen, who's on the right. Over on the left is a man named Creighton Abrams. If you know anything about the military today, the tanks are called Abrams tanks, and they're named after him. He was considered Patton. He was in the middle. One of his top tank commanders during World War II. And these two followed Patton, starting after Normandy, and they led a lot of the attacks against the German army. And they were nicknamed Roosevelt's highest paid butchers, Jewish criminals by the Nazis. Their faces were on billboards during World War II, and leaflets were dropped behind the lines to warn people about their generosity. Of course, they were not really bad people, but that's what the Germans thought of them. But they were highly successful. They both won every medal, combat medal you can win, but the Medal of Honor. And that's quite an achievement. When Harold Cohen joined the Army in 1942, he went in as a buck private. Because he was so successful, slowly moved up the ranks, became a colonel, and he commanded a whole battalion during the war, at the war's end. There's a story about him after the war was over. Abrams stayed in the Army, later became a four-star general and chairman of the Army Chief of Staff, which is the top general in the Army. He took over the Vietnam War after William Westmoreland was replaced. He finished the war for Dixon in Vietnam. Harold Cohen decided he was a volunteer, he would want to have a military career. But in 1947, he was approached by the Israelis. This is a story that's coming from his family. To go to Israel to train soldiers for the impending establishment of the State of Israel in 1948. He turned it down. And there was a man that took his place, this is the story I'm told, named Mickey Marcus. Anybody know that name?
Yes.
He was the, Kim, I just thank you for telling me that. I speed up. He was the subject of a movie called Cast a Giant Snapshot, and Kirk Douglas played his part. This is a part Harold Cohen could have had. I'm not terrified of that. This is Max Eichhorn. He was stationed in Spartanburg for 2 years, 42 to 44, at Camp Croft, which was a large establishment on the south side of the city. He was a Jewish chaplain, and his unit liberated Dachau in April of 45. He did the first religious services inside a concentration camp. And we got a couple of posters out there. One of them is speech he gave to the inmates that day in April of 1945. This is Dr. Love Rosa Hirschman Gant. She was the first woman to practice medicine in Spartanburg. She was the first woman to graduate from the Medical University of South Carolina. So she has a very historic presence. And she did all kinds of things here and there at public health over the years. This is Dr. Joseph Goldberger. A lot of people in Spartan, at least in the community, I don't think they know much about him. He never joined the temple, but this is about Jewish Spartanburg. He was here from 1914 to 1920. He ran something called the Pellegrino Hospital on Forest Street near Spartan Mills. I grew up there as a young child. For about 10 years, I lived in the apartment complex. I used to walk by the building where the hospital used to be and wondered what it was. And I was told it was some kind of a hospital. But he did work there for 6 years. He did experiments. And he was trying to find the cause of a disease called pellagra, a horrible disease, and trying to find a cure. And he was nominated 5 times for a Nobel Prize in Medicine for his research. We believe he had some dealings with Dr. Rosa Gant, who also worked treat people with pellagra, but we haven't verified that yet. This is Simon Hecklin. He was a member of the temple. Hecklin's here today. I did not know this because he used to come to our basketball games. Most of the basketball teams here, by the way, by the AZA from the 1960s. And Simon Hecklin used to come to some of our games. And to me, he was just another man watching today. But he was a star player for Walford in 1920-22, played 2 years. He was captain of the team, star player. I've got 2 articles from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution to say he was one of the best basketball players in the South. And he was quite an athlete. This is Al Rosen. Most people have heard of him. He was born in Spartanburg. His parents were members of the synagogue. He lived here for 2 years. And then the family moved away. His grandfather was Abe Levin, one of the earlier photographs I showed, who started the temple. And he went on to Major League Baseball career, became known as Abraham of Major League Baseball. And in 1953, he was the American League MVP. He was an all-star for 4 years. And he later was president of the New York Yankees under Steinbrenner. He was president and CEO of the San Francisco Giants for 7 years. And also the president and CEO of the Houston Astros for 5 years, very distinguished career. I got to speak to him twice before he passed away 3 years ago. And I really wanted to see this man, but he got sick and we could never get together. He lived in Southern California, a place called Rancho Mirage. Bill, you probably know where that is. He was a really nice man, very nice man. This is Seymour Rosenberg. He was a member of the temple for a long, long time. Is Nancy here? This is Nancy's father. He had a daily column called The Strollers on the front page of the Herald Journal every day for like 30-some-odd years. You look on the front page and on the left column, you see a leprechaun with a little hat and pipes in his mouth. And he would comment on what was going on in the city. He would tell jokes and stories. If you had a pothole, he would tell somebody in the city to come fix it, and it would get fixed in a couple of days. And every now and then he would anger people, and he got slowed one time because he was for gambling, and somebody against gambling didn't like that. And he makes some remarks. One time he got censored by the State House for calling everybody in Columbia a bunch of clowns. Never going to issue a warrant, arrested, but it never happened. But that picture really I think shows what he's really like. He just had a really wry sense of humor. Billy Shapiro is here on my left. I came all the way from Santa Barbara. Billy was a track star. I was three or four years behind him. I was also on the track team. But he was the 100, 200 yard dash champion, I think, junior and senior year. He also ran the quarter mile, which I did not know until recently. And he later went to Tulane and became one of the top quarter milers in the country. And then we have a display outside in the social hall. In 65, he was picked for the Maccabiah Games, the Jewish Olympics in Israel, and he won 2 gold medals. He won gold. Gold medal in the 400 meter race, and then he was the anchor on the 1600 relay team. And 54 years later, that record still stands.
Wow.
This is an interesting character. Abe Simon came here in 1929, opened a store called Saul's. It's a women's shop. A year later, he married Lottie Geffen Simon, two or three people who remember her. I remember her from the 60s. Interesting story about him. When he was a young man, he tried to enlist for the draft. At that time, I believe the draft age was 21. He was either 19 or 20. They wouldn't take him. He wanted to fight in World War I. That year, something called the Jewish Legion was formed. There were 5 British units that formed the Jewish Legion. And they asked Jews around the world to join and go fight the Turks, who were allies of Germany, to free Palestine. They secretly trained in a place called Fort Edward Canada. That's a picture in the middle. That was taken, I believe, Yom Kippur of 1918, by the way. And they all lived in those tents and trained in those tents for several months. And he was there. He was in one of the first 2 groups. And about 3 days later, the man on the right, David Ben-Gurion, came and trained with him. And they fought together. He, of course, was the first prime minister of Israel. And then he fought some battles in Palestine. We have a display board in the social hall that shows him with some of his comrades after what's called the Battle of Megiddo. It was a cavalry battle, and it was the last major war, last major battle in Palestine against the Turks. This is a picture, this is an interesting little story, and I'll wrap it up. These are houses on a street called Harris Place. It's a one block street, only one block long, and there's a view of looking east and looking west. This was built around 1910, and between 1910 and 1920, Jewish families lived there. It was a Jewish neighborhood. It's the only Jewish neighborhood that Spartanburg ever really had. And we bumped into this by taking the addresses of people from census records and city directories and getting a map, and all these houses were filled with Jews. This was about 2 blocks from Morgan Square, which is downtown Spartanburg. And back in that time period, everybody lived downtown. It was only later that they moved in the suburbs and moved out of the downtown area. This is the building we're going to visit this afternoon. It's what it looks like now. That's the front door. That's the picture. It's a little bit of that. It looks a little different today, but that's the Bima. That's an old one. I'm going to skip that one. This is some of the group that got. We had a little local committee to plan this starting back in January. That's Ben Stauber, Andy Polykoff, Sandy Gordon. That's when I met Sandy. What a delight. I'm glad I met her. And this is Doc Frank, one of our oldest members. Doc. Now we have our oldest member is here today, and I want her to raise her hand if she can. She's over on my left. Dorothy Cohen, we call her Doc Cohen, and she's a lovely lady, and I love this lady, and I'm glad she made it. She's has to get around in a wheelchair these days, but I'm glad she came to this event. These are some more shots inside the building of some of the stained glass windows. Rosa Gant, the doctor who's in charge of putting these windows in. Dot is standing where she was married in the 1950s, and this picture was made in Pastor Thompson's with us, and there's Andy. And these are what the pews look like. These are solid oak pews. The floors are solid oak. That's kind of what it looks like on the inside. And there we are at the Glen, the big fat guy on the right. That's about it. Let's get some questions. We'll do one more thing, and I'd like to speak to Stan very quickly. We have a committee, Andy Polycop and Stan, Sandy. Okay, Susan Abelcock, Sandy, not here.
They may be setting up.
Hank Steinberg is out of town. Gerald Smith's not here. Gary and Sandy Smiley. And Harry Price, who could not be here today, who was supposed to be in our panel today, by the way. They helped put this together and started working together. And they also contributed funds so we can have some of the extras you see here today. This is really special. I've been to a lot of these over the years. I'm very prejudiced, of course, but I think this is one of the nicest ones. So thanks again for having us and sending us all.
Thank you so much. That was really tremendous, and so enjoyed learning about that history of this congregation, and so very glad to be with you. Again, I'm Mark Swick. I'm the director of the Jewish Historical Society of South Carolina, and along with Rachel Barnett, our outgoing president, Jeffrey Rosenblum, our incoming president, Lily Filler, and so many others. It really is my pleasure to welcome you all here today. A quick note or two, and then a quick honor before we break. So a reminder about our afternoon activities, that following the upcoming panel, we're going to drive to the Old Synagogue location, as Joe just mentioned. That's in your programs, which are out in the lobby still, but the address is 191 South Dean, and we'll be visiting the former synagogue there. Subsequent to that, dinner will be back here at 6 p.m. with a wine bar and entertainment from Spartanburg's own Cap and Collar. I know that we're excited about that. One quick note is that after we take a break, which will be up next, I'd love our panelists to come up forward just to make sure that we have everybody here, everybody knows what they're doing. Joe?
Yes. Three quick things. We all go to the Old Synagogue. Uh-huh. We're going to have a couple of photographers there. We'd like all of you to stand on the steps to make a picture. And then we'd like to make a second picture of all the people coming back who grew up here. Picture on the steps, so we can have it and get everybody copy. Third, tonight when we have dinner, the back several tables will be for the people coming back for the reunion. They'll be marked reserved, and we're going to do a couple special things when that happens, okay?
Everybody hear that?
Y'all hear it?
A quick repetition. We're going to have a photo at the Old Synagogue of folks who are visiting back to Spartanburg. We're going to do a photo in front of this synagogue. Of the
Old Synagogue.
Oh, just at the Old Synagogue. Good. More is more. If you want to take a picture here, we'll do that also. And that the last piece was that folks who want to have a particular save table of people looking for a reunion to reconnect, that'll be the back couple tables, the far side of the social hall afterwards. Before I call Rachel up, just a quick note about where we're going to be going after this. Please do feel free to take a couple minutes for a bathroom break. There's some snacks, a little bit of nosh and coffee and water in the sisterhood room. That's not where we had lunch, but the smaller room to the side. Without further ado, Rachel Barnett.
Great to be in Spartanburg. Thank you, Paul. I want to call Jeffrey Rosenblum up, please. Jeffrey doesn't know we did this. Come here. Please. I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of presidents over the course, and I was president also, so I know what it takes to make these meetings happen. And I got to tell you, working with this guy these past 2 years, you stepped up when Marty was in the midst of retiring, and you took the helm, and you gave us such great guidance, and we really appreciate everything you've done. So just a little token.
It really wasn't a task to do this. You do some things because you just want to and you enjoy it. This is one of them. Thank you.
So again, we'll be back here in about 25 minutes, 20 minutes.